Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for our development associate position. Learn more at democracynow.org. Juan, it's been wonderful doing the show with you
here
in New York. Can't wait to have you back Friday. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
When they separated families, we took them to court and won. When they limited access to essential health care, we fought the bans and won. And now they're determined to reverse more of our hard-won rights and freedoms. But if they try to take away our rights, they've got to get past us. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we will fight any attempts to roll back our rights in the courts, in state legislatures, and in the streets.
When you're surrounded by oppressive laws, you can't just sit back and be oppressed. You get up and fight. And all of us at the ACLU are fighting for you.
Right now, the ACLU's work is more important than ever. The ACLU is fighting in the courts and advocating in all 50 states to ensure that all of us can exercise our rights. To learn more about ACLU's work defending our civil liberties, go to myaclu.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
How you doing?
I don't know.
Well, I know. I know how I'm doing. I'm frustrated because I had an audio clip that I wanted to play, and I left it in the other room. And I can't leave. I can't go there to get it. And there's no network that connects me to that particular place. And, well, it's kind of sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to be sad. We can just expect that we'll get to that clip eventually. But, yeah, we're on the air, and I'm ready. I'm all set. What do you got?
Well, if only I could kill time.
I can't tell you the time. I'm not facing the clock. Do you want me to turn around and look at the clock? I'll do that.
Yeah, you can do that. Sure.
I'll turn around.
That'll kill a little bit of time.
Okay, so it's it looks like 4.5 minutes after 6. That's when we have a show, right?
I'm going to pull this out.
So it's really beautiful out.
It's nice outside, yeah.
I hope people are enjoying a little fresh air. It had been overcast, but I'm glad that foggy patch is blown off and revealed the sort of bright and sunny. I like the combination of like that crisp air and sunny weather. And you get into the sunshine, it warms you up, and I find that nice, because you're not in like the mugginess of a midsummer or late summer afternoon where it's incredibly warm and humid. It's really bright. It's like autumn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the opposite.
You say that, the opposite of autumn, which is spring, I guess.
We're officially into spring, and I got to a lot of those. Repairs and things around the yard I was working on, so that's fun.
You know, we haven't heard in a while.
I'm ready.
We haven't heard the sea shanty ID. That will enable me enough time to run through the complex to the other machine. Not that anybody down there can help bring it over here. Well, they don't know where it is.
That's how it's designed.
Yeah.
Don't knock it.
No,
just
I'm not.
Do it.
I'm not knocking.
I want to actually hear the shanty too, because it's a really good ID. And we got to do more. There are so many creative people here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Okay. Well, I'm going to the sea shanty ID, by the way, is something that was put together by someone who used to be here named Mike Girardo, and a bunch of other USB people back in the 1970s. I think this existed before we even went on the air, which is quite a feat when you think about it. So we're going to play that while I run down the hall and hopefully get what I forgot and come back. So, yeah, stand by. It's only radio.
When I first came to Brookhaven town, way, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around.
Way, 90.1.
Then one day I turned on the dial.
Way, 90.1.
There I found music to make me smile.
Way, 90.1.
I waited for a legal ID.
Way, 90.1.
The DJ said WUSB.
Way, 90.1.
They start each day with the rising sun.
Way, 90.1.
Don't ever finish till after day is done.
Way, 90.1.
So if you want good music to hear.
Way, 90.1.
There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear.
Way, 90.1.
So if you like the sounds, do take a look.
Way, 90.1.
At WUSB Stony
Brook.
No, stop that. I thought I left the microphone on.
Hey.
I just made it in time. Wow. Oh, thank God for long IDs. And thank you, everybody who put that together way back. But, yeah, that was our ID for a while. In fact, people still play it.
I love that format because you can do anything. There's so many funny and interesting and kind of inspiring or just sort of spacey and strange and odd things you can do with just a quick format. It's like short film, but you know, yeah, there's a great way to get a whole bunch of people singing in a certain way, and it's such a good flavor. So what do you got?
What did
you go and do? What are you even talking about?
Well, that might not become clear. Yeah, talk about radio. You know, we have all kinds of fun things to reminisce about and discuss.
And we live in the 21st century, so it's all at our fingertips. We can, like, reference it. We can, like, find it. There are a lot of people that are returning to and playing and drawing inspiration from work they've done before or work other people have done at the radio station and creating new things and innovating, kind of taking things in a different direction. And we're here for it. We're listening.
It's the 21st century indeed, and that's why everything sucks.
But you can capture it so that people know it sucks later on. And that's, I think, what I'm saying is, like, archiving stuff and keeping a close eye on your own history and not losing it so that you can refer to it and put it into a new context.
That's remarkably apropos because you don't know the story I'm going to be reading. And
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yet what you're saying is, apropos. There's no other word that can match that. I'm going to be... spending the next couple of minutes mourning a friend that has been given an execution date. And do you remember when we said goodbye to WCBS News Radio 88 in New York City?
880 AM.
Great signal. You could get it in Florida. It was just, you know, something many of us grew up on. Just, you know, news various times, sports on the 15-minute mark.
Especially breaking news.
Business news at 25 after.
Yeah.
Wow, I sound just like them. Traffic and weather together, I believe. And then they decided, you know what, we need another sports channel here, another sports station on the AM dial. We have like six of them, but let's add another one. That left us with only one news station, WINS, owned by the same people as WCBS, which is rather odd. But then again, most of the sports stations are owned by the same people. Anyway, signal not nearly as good, the magic somehow isn't the same. But at least we have something. But this past week, even more bad news. And this is what happens when people who have no clue what radio is are the ones in charge of it. They don't get it. They don't understand. CBS News Radio was a pioneer of the mass media century. The proving ground, the star journalist like Edward R. Murrow with a distinctive five-tone chime that became synonymous with breaking news long before the rise of 24-hour cable and the Internet. And now, Paramount Skydance, which is the parent company of CBS and responsible for so much badness lately, they announced on Friday that the CBS News radio, CBS News, the radio news network, was going to stop. They're going to sign off after 99 years. And that's going to happen near the end of May. What I ran down the hall to get, and I had to get it because, you know, not hearing this just would have been another tragedy on top of everything else. But I want to play you a sound that millions of us were familiar with throughout the decades. And a version of it exists today, but it's not quite the same. Never is quite the same. But I imagine this sound will strike some reminiscing in some people. It's from a radio station, not here. I think it's in Philadelphia. But then it's followed by the familiar chimes on the hour of the CBS radio network. Let's listen.
Talk Radio 1210, WCAU AM, Philadelphia. CBS News, this is Paul Lockwood.
That was it. That's the whole thing. You've heard that, haven't you, Kyle?
I have.
Yeah, that, because every hour on the hour stations would go to that, and you'd hear that chime, and you'd hear CBS News. And, you know, you tune in. If you're driving, let's find out what's happening in the world. That was your CNN. That was finding out the latest. Yeah, it wasn't the best. It wasn't very much in detail, but it did link us together, and it was something that we could depend upon. And, you know, much like BBC News, not nearly the same quality, but that's something that is always there on the hour that you come to rely on as something that is comforting, you know. And now, nope, doesn't make sense. Not bringing in the money, so we can't have this. It's that attitude. It's that attitude that destroys the magic. You know, there are some things that maybe they're not supposed to make money. You know, like mass transit. Is that really supposed to turn a profit, or is that a public service? You know, same thing with providing a service to your listeners and having a news update to keep them informed, to know what's going on. And, boy, we sure need that. We need to know what's going on because a lot of people, I got to tell you, they don't know what's going on. They don't know how to find things on maps. They don't know history. They don't know current events. And they don't care because we teach them not to care. And then we wonder, why is everyone so ignorant? Why don't people, you know, give a crap about what's going on around them? Why don't they participate? Well, it's because we keep taking away these little things that matter, that link us to the past. This is something my grandfather would listen to. Maybe even my great-grandfather. I don't know, but everybody in the country heard this at some point. It matters. It means something. And sure, maybe it's not making money hand over fist, but does that mean it's worthless? I'm glad I ran down the hall for that, because I needed to say that. This is important. This is a big deal. And they couldn't wait till 100 years? They had to do it at 99? Boy, these people are paramount. What won't they destroy? They're going to take over CNN now and HBO and everything else? Are they coming for us? Are they coming for USB?
Not as far as I can tell.
Who will get to us first, the corporations or the government?
I know you're trying to be serious, but that's a joke. That's so funny, because the lovely thing about community-supported radio is that we have our own air of authority, our own air of seriousness, and it befits the community that we serve. It's a little smaller, sure, but I like to think that when we lose an authority or a big example like that, that we redouble our efforts and kind of bolster the things that remain, the things that can offer a similar kind of comfort, but also source of critical information. I don't know. I'm getting kind of lost in thought, but that's so crucial. I get what you mean by like it being diminished and basically cut off before really proving that, you know, it doesn't provide something to people of, you know, that's of value even to advertisers. But I guess prevailing winds and the costs, the overhead, I don't know. I mean, that thing of like, just because it doesn't have a business case doesn't mean that the medium or that the editing, the kind of expertise isn't valid, right, in the form. The kind of writing, the kind of coverage of breaking events and things, that is all still critical work and maybe could be adapted instead, especially when we face ownership things like that are really beyond our control, even collectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going through this this New York Times story. Yeah, New York Times, they still exist. They're a newspaper. People say that's dying, but it's, you know, it really isn't. It really isn't. It adapts. It changes. It's essential. It really is.
I honestly I had a good time with the mini crossword, and I was like playing it while in transit,
mm-hmm.
and I thought to myself, gee, you know, this is a different kind of era. It kind of dawned on me. And, you know, that one of those reflective moments where things are a little surreal. And I was like, wow, this wasn't exactly what a printed newspaper could offer as far as entertainment or information, as far like being able to go through so many stories or,
right.
or catch up on things as they're breaking. You know, your main news page,
right,
A page is literally changing dynamically in like half hour periods as you find out about some airstrike or something. That's incredible. You couldn't do that with a printed page. And I agree. There's another newspaper I subscribe to that doesn't have an app. They have, they have sort of an app, but it isn't as interactive and I don't read it as much. And I realize, wow, it's because they invested in this that I'm more likely to pick it up and peruse and find something that sparks my curiosity or that I'm actually entertained by.
Right.
So other papers, other places that can invest and develop something that's as dynamic and kind of cool compared to what the printed page was, it makes them kind of at a disadvantage in an era when you really can do all kinds of stuff with the software. So I don't know. I just had one of those feelings or like this this sort of detached feeling of like, wow, this is kind of amazing that I'm sitting here being entertained by a puzzle.
Notice how we lapse into talking about newspapers instead of the radio that's dying. That might be part of the problem. It's a parallel. It really is. People say these are old examples of media. These are old ways of getting news. They're no longer relevant. But you just demonstrated
both.
How it can remain relevant, how it can grow.
They're both.
Radio is no different. Radio can change, adapt, grow, and be relevant. More people listen to radio in cars than any other medium. That's something that is you know, proven over and over again, that people do listen to the radio.
Yeah, and there's so much in radio that has a strong connection to music, mm-hmm. and it's laughable to sit there and say, like, okay, music's kind of become boring. Like, there's nothing else to do with it.
Well, people make the same argument about music. You know, they say, well, you know, the record industry is dead. Everything is streaming these days. The artists make less than ever before. The non super successful ones I'm talking about.
Right when, like, MIDI 2.0 is launched, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden we're going to give up on music. Like, there's nothing else.
No, I mean, it's...
I think that's a wildly... shallow kind of argument.
When you get rid of radio journalism, that leaves you with radio podcasts and opinions and things like that. Things that will get a lot of listeners, get people yelling at the radio and all that, but it won't necessarily inform them as to what's actually going on. Whereas if you have journalists out there researching news stories and bringing you their findings, that is a valuable service. You take that away and, like we said at the beginning of the hour, you wind up with a whole bunch of ignorant people that don't know what's going on. Now, okay, according to this Time story, they're actually blaming themselves. They say the expansion into audio journalism by formerly print-only news outlets like the New York Times has chipped away at traditional radio's presence in public life. NBC licensed its news radio brand to iHeartMedia in 2016, 10 years ago. That same year, the CBS Corporation moved to end its radio ownership business, announcing plans to sell 117 stations that once reached 70 million people a week. CBS News Radio itself had been whittled down to a handful of correspondents in recent years and is unprofitable. Yeah, okay, not really a big revelation there. Still, a Nielsen study found that radio today, this is what I was talking about, radio today reaches 93% of American adults, particularly commuters who drive to and from work. Yeah, hi there. There's people listening to us that are driving back from work, I think. And maybe some who are driving to work. Because you can do that. Just drive carefully, all right? Don't get upset at anything we say and start swerving. CBS said its radio network was providing reporting and short news segments to about 700 subscriber affiliates, that's radio stations, including major metro stations like 1010 Winds in New York. Those stations that wish to continue carrying national news reporting will need to look elsewhere. Yeah, and in a staff memo Friday, Barry Weiss, who's the editor-in-chief of CBS News, and Tom Sobrowski, who's the president, observed that the radio network has served as the foundation for everything we have built since 1927. But because of a shift in radio station programming strategies and challenging economic realities, the company concluded that it was impossible to continue the service. Really, impossible? Impossible to continue the service. You know, I just read that it was whittled down to a handful of correspondents. You're broadcasting 4 minutes on the hour of a news update. You know, you can partner with various other news outlets, and you can come up with something that will provide the service. 93% of Americans are listening to the radio. You know, that's not insignificant. And if you can't figure out how to make money, okay, you know, maybe it's not meant to make money. Maybe that's not what it's about. They don't get it. And people who run commercial radio are some of the biggest idiots I think I have ever been familiar with over the years, because they just keep getting it wrong. You know, you turn on the FM stations and you get the same formats, the same music. Nobody wants to take chances. They just keep doing the same thing and wondering why they fail. You know, at least here in WUSB, we try different things. It may not always work. It may, you know, rub people the wrong way sometimes. Yeah, that's what happens. That's part of life. But at least we try. At least we're out there trying different things and learning and teaching. So, since I know we have Radiothon coming up, this is as good a time as any to pledge your support to WUSB. Go to WUSB.fm. You'll see a pledge button there on the left, and just click on that. And show your support for the kind of radio that intends to stick around. That's not going to write it off as a business loss and say there's no future here. There's nothing but future here.
And cool music.
Definitely cool music, yeah.
And cool people, cool personalities, cool interviews, live performances from time to time, sometimes concert series. There's all kinds of pre-recorded discussions with various experts, a lot of tie-in with the university programs and activities on campus. So I think that, it's hands down, the programming is just so much better in your local resources. And I know that every bit of those contributions are a big deal and much, much appreciated, and just basically make the operational activities of the station a smoother process. We get things repaired. We get caught up if we're trying to work on projects or we're behind on something that got overlooked. We take care of that stuff with your contributions and can just basically focus on that programming and getting people trained and bringing in people that are new to radio or coming back to radio, maybe returning and doing a show, a continuation of stuff they did after a hiatus. Like, that is what it is. It's an open door. It's a great way to hear from your own neighborhood and enjoy what there is culturally and what's going on with I don't know, the world of news and and people's opinions and and the weather, of course, when things go badly or nice, like I was talking about earlier. Well, for gardening right now.
Yeah, well, when there's a hurricane coming, though, do you want somebody who's local talking to you? Do you want somebody, you know, who's being fed from a distant city or someone who's not even human? You know, telling you updates, telling you what to do, sharing stories, opening up phone lines. That's the magic of radio.
We're opening the phone line? Okay.
No, not now.
But you can do that on the radio. You provide an avenue for people to give feedback and to join in the conversation as
there,
well.
There is not one good thing out there that these idiots can't destroy by saying it's not profitable. They can destroy books. They can destroy magazines. They can destroy the film industry, the music industry, the radio industry, everything. They can just say it's, you know, outgrown its time. Or it's outlasted its time. Let's do something else instead that appeals to the current crowd that can only focus on something for 5 seconds at a time. You know, I'm not saying don't try new things, but you don't have to throw everything away. You can learn from what has been built in the past. You can keep building on that and making it stronger and better instead of just throwing it all away. So, you know what? Give us CBS News. We'll run it. We might lose a lot of money, but at least it'll be run by people who care. All right. A lot of collisions lately. The collision at LaGuardia a couple of days ago. Airplane hitting a fire truck. That was something. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening before. But apparently, air traffic control gave the wrong directions to a fire truck to cross a runway as an Air Canada plane was landing, and wasn't a good result. This is the first time, and tell me, Kyle, if this is true for you, first time I knew that air traffic control talked to fire trucks. I didn't think they had to do that as well as talking to all the planes that are landing and taking off and taxiing and all that. But they have to tell fire trucks when to go and when to stop? And this is only the first time this has happened?
Yeah, I think that, I knew that there's different frequencies for different phases of flight, and typically someone or parts of air traffic control, they're segmented and separated, so someone's concern is either something that's on the ground and stuff that's like approaching, and then of course regional and other layers of the air traffic. Mm-hmm. But this kind of seems like they were doing that as a course of training for, say, like an emergency where they have to kind of cross over to other agencies at the airport. Does that make sense? Like if they're in an emergency, you break out of that strictly sort of like air-to-air or air-to-or grounds communications amongst planes because you have an emergency, so you have to kind of coordinate. But it still seems like it wasn't something that one person was in charge of. There's a lot of speculation.
No, that's way too much to expect one person to.
And that they were already doing ground and other approach kind of activities.
You heard the recordings of them talking back and forth.
Yeah.
Those are hard to make out exactly what they're saying and who they're directing it at. And you know, when people have a million other things going on at the same time, it's very easy to see how mistakes can be made. People might not hear. And you said different frequencies. So that means that the incoming plane didn't hear that there was a fire truck crossing. And, you know, they're not going to be privy to all the information going on. It just seems like there's a lot of room for bad things to happen. But, you know, shouldn't there be a system in place that says, yeah, you just gave permission for a fire truck to cross the runway, but there's a plane coming in, so I'm going to sound a big, you know, loud alarm to tell you that's a mistake. There doesn't seem to be anything that rudimentary that can do that, you know, and I think that's a real problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things that the NTSB is going to be looking at, like the conditions and, the escalating of this ground emergency taking priority, especially over active runway. Like, at first when I heard the story, I was like, oh, the plane was taxiing and just like brushed or like bumped into a fire truck that was also taxiing. Maybe the truck was in the wrong or something,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa. Just like at a slow taxiing speed or the truck idling or parked in the wrong place kind of situation. But when you saw some of the video, it's like, no, that thing was landing. Like still in the phase of braking on an active runway.
It was going fast.
That, like, I don't know if the truck was already too far out and judged to like gun it and like go across to try to get out of the way, or if they even realized it. But had they not been further across the runway, the plane would have they probably would have taken a landing gear to the front of it. So. I don't know. They may have already been in the runway before they realized it and couldn't either back up in time or accelerate in time. Either way, it was totally just tragic and, like, you'd think avoidable. And I can't help but wonder if there's buffoonery involved as far as leadership that is more culpable than we might admit.
Well, they're trying to cover their asses for how many people were actually on duty at the time. You know, the people that keep firing them or making it difficult or whatever. There need to be a lot more people there keeping track of what's going on. This should never even be a possibility that something this avoidable could happen. Okay, but they're not the only things colliding. The number of cars hitting deer on Long Island has risen 75% over 8 years to the highest level on record. That's a consequence of what biologists say is severe overpopulation of deer on the East End and North Shore, and it's spreading west. But, you know, I'm not a biologist, so I'm not reaching that conclusion. I'm just someone on the radio who believes that Another thing that accounts for this, people who don't know how to drive. You know, do you see it every day? You see people making boneheaded decisions, not looking around them, being aggressive, thinking they own the road, and basically causing a lot of damage. You know, we should have road tests on a regular basis. You get one. You get one when you get your license. And it's just assumed that for the next, you know, 60 or so years, you're going to be at the same level of competence when it comes to driving. It's not true. It's definitely not true. We need to pay a lot more attention to what we're teaching people. And there are just so many things where there is room for improvement. But, yeah, blame the deer. If you want to blame the deer, Southold Town Highway Department worker Fred Friedberg, who was a 42-year veteran, has seen the aftermath firsthand. He's had to remove an increasing number of dead deer, as many as six a day. More than 220 deer, roughly one per mile, were killed on town roadways in a single year. That's according to police. Gene Thatcher, the mayor of Lloyd Harbor, which is a village in the town of Huntington, says the deer are literally running into cars. Really, Gene? The deer are running into cars? I mean, we're already blaming the deer. You don't have to say that they're actively chasing cars and running into them. I think the cars are mostly the ones hitting the deer. And again, I'm not blaming one over the other. They're both at fault. But here's the thing. We have rules. We have signs. We have lines. We have turn lanes. We have school zones. We have all these things designed to keep us safe. But on the road, who has right of way, you or a deer? Yeah, the deer is not looking at the signs. They don't follow the same traffic patterns as we do. And that's something I think we forget. You know, it's like, well, I have right of way here. That deer is wrong. Well, the deer doesn't know that, and the deer is going to do what they intend to do without regard to traffic rules of human beings. And if we have that implanted in our brains as we're driving, maybe we have less of a chance of running into one of them.
No, I don't want a brain implant while I'm driving.
Didn't say that, but yeah, it's a problem. And the other thing they are blaming this on is the fact that there are no predators to deer. You know, that there's no more wolves. I'm in favor of wolves being reintroduced to Long Island. I really am. I wouldn't mind some wolves. Or how about some bear? Wolves, bear, coyotes? Yeah, okay, so your small dog probably shouldn't be running around outside by themselves. They might have a problem with that. Your kids might have to learn to run a little faster. But, you know, apart from all that, why not? Or hunting? I mean, people like to hunt deer sometimes, but usually you have to use a bow and arrow, and that can be kind of problematic for human beings in the area. Anyway, have you ever had a deer?
No.
Well, if you do, just keep in mind that deer vehicle crashes can be expensive, and not so much for the deer, although they could lose their lives, they usually do. But for humans, a State Farm study found the average claim for a deer collision was about $4,000, but that was in 2017. Fred Friedberg of Kutchug prefers painting traffic stripes or fishing for tuna with his buddies off Montauk, for that matter. But removing roadkill does not bother me, not one bit. He said, okay. All right, Fred, well, that might be a passion of yours, but goes into all kinds of detail about what it's like to take the carcass off the road. You know, this story really laps into something else, but I was trying to provide a public service.
Well, someone's out there doing it, and I guess it is important work if that's the hazard we're faced with. So, yeah, absolutely be careful. You can actually be grievously injured by striking animals while driving, and it's, I think, a good practice to look for all living creatures because, especially as the seasons change, there are a lot more people out. People want to enjoy the weather. They're out walking. Sometimes they don't have lights. Sometimes they're commuting. They're going from point A to point B, just like you, going to work or going to visit family. They're using these roadways, and I think expressing caution for, you know, squirrels, deer, all kinds of creatures is a good practice in general, especially when you encounter humans and people at nighttime when there's low visibility. You might come upon a cyclist coming around a corner, or any number of scenarios, maybe a combination of them, and driving with this sort of reckless impunity is probably not the best behavior to approach those kinds of situations. And I just think I like to remind people, especially when the warmer weather approaches, that activity increases and there is a lot more wildlife out there, including humans. So be careful while driving.
Deer are so damn big. I mean, you know, you have to be able to see them. Sure, they have protective coloration, but there are all kinds of other creatures out there, raccoons and possum and dogs and cats and children. You have to be very careful. And that's why I really do think there should be road tests at least every 5 years. You know, you have to get your eyes checked. Why not have your just general ability to deal with difficult situations on, or even simple situations on the road? I see people failing at that every day. And I would welcome the opportunity to be tested myself, you know, to make sure that I'm still, you know, capable of driving. It's not, you know, it's not a right to be able to just plow down the highway in a, you know, a two-ton vehicle. That's not in the Constitution, is it? No, it's not. Right to travel, I think that's, you know, that's a right. But, you know, there's a reason you have a license. All right.
And set a good example.
Yeah. Think of the kids. Okay, so you heard Robert Mueller died.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
He is deceased.
Yeah. You hear what Trump said about this?
He was dancing on his undug grave.
Well, almost. I mean, Trump can't dance to save his life, but this is what he said on his Truth Social charade. Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people. I don't believe that. Even, you know, if this guy was gunning for him and all he was doing his job, you know, of investigating and reaching conclusions, and, you know, many people, myself included, feel he didn't go nearly far enough and was not aggressive enough, but whatever. This is the example you set for people, you know, when somebody passes away, you celebrate, even if they're your opponent in one form or another. Okay, well then, explain to me how everybody got bent out of shape whenever someone said one critical word about Charlie Kirk after he was killed. Do you remember that? You know, if you said anything that was critical of him, all of a sudden there were people trying to get you fired. Or chasing you down, or marking you as one of the assassins. You know, sick things like that. It had people really, really scared. So now, I guess, it's now okay to say, oh, I'm glad Charlie Kirk is dead. Yeah, he can't hurt anybody else. I would never say that. You know, I would never say that about anybody. You know, unless they literally had their hands around my throat and I was able to, you know, to conquer them or whatever. Celebrating somebody's death is, I don't know, to me it's just something that I don't aspire to. And yet here we have the President of the United States celebrating the death of an 80-plus-year-old man simply because he didn't like the job that he was assigned, that happened to be looking for some of the illegal things Trump was doing. And, you know, we see this in other ways, too, you know, with assassinating foreign leaders that happen to not be pro-America enough. They celebrate that now as well. You know, they're not trying to even act civilized at all. You know, Netanyahu is out there saying, we're going to kill any Iranian leader that is elected or assigned to the job. We're just going to do that because We think they're all bad. And that's now considered acceptable. I mean, how disgusting are we going to let things get? And, you know, Trump has, of course, guaranteed that when his time comes, people will be dancing in the streets and celebrating and saying, good, I'm glad he's dead. Again, not something I aspire to. I don't want to be that kind of a person. But he clearly is, and he's encouraging his followers to be like that as well. We do not have to act that way. And I really hope we don't. But, wow. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, can you imagine someone like Obama saying something like that? I just can't. And regardless of how you feel about either one of them, I don't think there's much dispute there. So, yeah, dark moment.
Yeah, it's certainly irreverent of death. I think maybe there can be exceptions in some people's minds, but I don't know that it's healthy. And I think a lot of this is more aligned with just getting a reaction, you know, mm-hmm. the same old playbook.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I will be happy when he's no longer in power. I will be happy when we're not talking about him every single day. And I despise so many of the things that he does. And, you know, I will continue to work to do as much against what he is trying to do as I am capable of doing. But when it comes to a human being, you know, when you're at war, it's different. When you're at actual war, I know that a lot of that goes out the window. But we're civilians, you know? We're supposed to be acting a little bit differently. I don't want to be reduced to that. And I fear that with the divisiveness in this nation, many of us are being reduced to that. That's not in any way minimizing the damage that is being done to our country by these people. But I think the way to deal with it is to make sure they no longer have the ability to do this. You know? And that's where I want to focus my efforts. Not celebrating when you know, somebody dies. It just doesn't, I don't know, something about it just rubs me the wrong way. I know there are people who disagree with that, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's about isolating and disarming them. Like, they cannot have the power that is being abused in the way it is. And that's, I think, the best reaction. But certainly, yeah, I just can't get over, like, I mean, it's interesting, and I ask, what did Robert Mueller really do? Did he really hurt anyone or hurt this aggrieved person?
Not nearly enough, I would say.
I know, and I think what's telling, or maybe this is the times we're living in that I would read into it, or that I've been conditioned to read into it this way, but seems an awful lot like he got pretty close to him as far as, you know, describing it as hurting people. I mean, gee, maybe it's that he was effective, that the president seems to be have such disdain for him, you know, that he was effective and it got to him to such an extent that he's describing it this way.
Yeah.
I think that's the real subtext that we should read out of it.
It also indicates this is how he feels about anybody who is opposed to him or who works against him or who he sees as a threat. And that is not a leader.
It's not sporting.
Yeah, sporting is not a word that Donald Trump, I think, has ever applied to himself. This is interesting. The prospect that Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman might not qualify for the state's public campaign finance program could deal a serious blow to his bid to unseat Democratic incumbent Governor Kathy Hochul. Yeah, it seems he didn't fill out the paperwork properly. And now he's kind of screwed, it looks like. The question of whether Blakeman has met the requirements emerged this week as the Republican candidate looks to the matching funds program to compete with Hochul, who has a reputation as a prodigious fundraiser. Raising enough money to compete with Hochul has been Blakeman's biggest challenge to date. And New York is known for obscure election laws that have tripped up plenty of professionally run campaigns. According to the executive dean of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University, Larry Levy, this would be a near existential blow to whatever relatively slim chances he has based on party enrollment, Hochul's popularity, and her huge lead in cash on hand. Well, three things, that is. Party enrollment, Hochul's popularity, and her huge lead in cash on hand. You know, I'm going to say something that's kind of controversial here, even amongst, you know, present company, which right now is just me. I think Hochul should say, you know what, do whatever you have to make sure he gets the money. Give him the money. This guy's a joke. He's a white supremacist. He's a racist. He's ignorant. He's a buffoon. And, yeah, he happens to be the county executive of Nassau County, but he has no chance in a thousand hells of unseating the current governor. So, you know, let's not, you know, make him suffer even more. Let him run a campaign, sure. Fill out the paperwork wrong. Shows you what kind of leader he is. But let's make an exception. Let's let him play this game. Because, you know, letting him martyr himself by saying, look what the establishment is doing to me by not giving me money, that could actually make him more popular than if you give him the means to run a campaign and he runs a campaign where people see who he really is. You know, plus any accusations that Hochul is like trying to keep him down go away at that point. Because he'll try to do that. He'll try to say that this is all a plot by Kathy Hochul to prevent me from running, as if she's scared of him in any way. So, yeah, that's a fun story to follow. We'll see what happens with that. I was hoping Kyle would be here for this story because this is kind of interesting, having to do... Oh, there you are. Okay, doing some studio cleaning, I guess. The...
You don't need me.
I do, actually. I do. Everything's falling apart here. People don't see what's going on.
Okay. Now, well, we do have some improvements, and I'm excited about it, but it's not the topic of the discussion.
Last week, I told you how, you know, daylight savings time happened, and I wasn't even aware of it because everything happened automatically and nobody talked about it. Well, apparently people in Georgia feel the same way. The Georgia Senate last Monday passed a bill that would change Georgia's time zone and eliminate the twice annual changing of the clocks. House Bill 154 would have the state petition the U.S. Department of Transportation to change Georgia from the Eastern time zone to the Atlantic time zone. Change Georgia from the Eastern time zone to the Atlantic time zone. Atlantic time zone is what Nova Scotia uses. They're an hour ahead of us. So,
is this like a curvature of the Earth thing, like where it's like
no,
at the same
no
latitude
no,
or
if they,
longitude?
If they change to Atlantic, that means they're pushing their clocks ahead 1 hour. So if they do that, they're just changing the daylight savings time and keeping that all. Why don't they say that? Why are they saying Atlantic time zone instead of we just want to stay daylight savings time all year long? Is this some kind of a trick or something? Wow. What a weird story. All right, we have to look this up. House Bill 154. To change to the Atlantic. There's no other explanation here as to what this is all about. This is from wabe.org. The only thing I can think of is that there must be some kind of regulation preventing a state from going to daylight savings time all year long. And they think they're being clever and getting around it by saying, oh, we're not going to daylight savings time. We're going to Atlantic time. And we could somehow get the same time, but call it something else. Is everyone really that stupid that they're going to fall for that? I mean, I wasn't against it, but now I am, because, wow.
Don't underestimate the stupidity.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, the Atlanta Braves were in the Western Division of the National League, and I never understood that, because even as a kid, I knew they were in the East, pretty much as far east as you could get. And, yeah, that's what's going on this week. Well, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. That is our email address off the wall. And we also encourage people to pledge to WUSB, keep this radio station on the air.
Yeah, become a member, a friend of the station, a buddy of sorts. You can stream our program and others through the archive or live at WUSB.fm. And look out for our next show and upcoming programming, all kinds of exciting stuff in this new season.
That's right. It's a new season. And the season is spring of 2026. So keep listening to WUSB, whether it's a 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, or WUSB.FM. And again, go to that website to pledge whatever it is that that you feel like pledging on a monthly basis or a one-time thing. Just click on the pledge button.
And keep radio sturdy.
Radio is important. Radio is that's what you're listening to right now. You might be listening to us on the internet, but it's still radio. This is still a radio station. And hopefully one that will be around for a good long time. With that, this is Emmanuel for Kyle. You're Kyle.
You can be Kyle if you want to be.
No, that's okay. I'm having enough trouble being Kyle.
Honestly, Emmanuel. Be yourself.
Good night.
Bye.
In Metropolis, hooked on Necropolis, addict of Metropolis, do the worm on Necropolis, slam dance Cosmopolis, and lighten the populace.
His face painted whiter.
Charlie. What else?